justice. Man robbed, he killed, and you're smiling at him, how are you? I mean, enjoy a party with us. So you're doing injustice, you're being cruel to justice. When you're going to be cruel to justice, then there'll be no justice. By the same token, if the person did something, some achievement, right, and you recognize the achievement that he's done, and if you don't recognize it, then you've broken his morale. So where he's done an act of injustice, you will check him for it as well. But if he's done something good, an achievement, then recognize the good as well. And moving away from this, then this breaks about the person's morale, his spirit. There's no reason for him to work. Why must I work? There's no such a thing like respect here. You don't recognize the person's right. So when there's no recognition of rights, why must I work? Why must I slave myself? So the one meaning of adl is justice. We all know about it, right? And the other meaning of adl is moderation. Yeah, tidal. Right. Now this moderation, unless and until is not explained in the light of the Sharia, then we'll misinterpret it. Anybody and everybody will begin to misinterpret, because he will give his own explanation to moderation. He will give his own interpretation to moderation. What will happen to moderation? He will make a consumer of moderation. So everybody is open to give his own definition. So now you'll have to define what it is. On the plains of Mina, Nabi Sam instructs Ibn Abbas to fetch some pebbles for pelting, obviously. So he brought exactly the type of pebbles that Nabi Sam wanted. So Nabi Sam was very pleased. Kazalika fafalu. Wa iyakum wal ghulu. But be careful about fanaticism. Be careful about extremism. فَإِنَّمَا هَلَكَ مَنْ كَانَ قَبْلَكُمْ بِالْغُلُوِ فِي دِينِهِمْ. People in the past, they were destroyed because of the same extremism. Go on to one end, or they go to the other end, and because of this fanaticism, because of this extremism, they brought destruction to themselves, destruction to others. People heard about Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, so one person resolved, that me, I'm going to fast, I'm not ever break my fast. Asumu wala uftir. Another person heard about it. He said, no. Akumu wala anam. A whole night only tahajjud. Third person heard about Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. He says, wala atazawwaju an-nisa. I'll never get married. When Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam heard about this, he was affected, disturbed. And he says, uftiru wa asum. At times I fast, and at times I don't fast. Wa anamu wa akum, I sleep also at night, and I get up for tahajjud also. Wa tazawwaju an-nisa, and I do get married as well. And man raghiba an sunnati falaysa minni, you move away from my sunnah, then you're not of me, you are an alien group. You want to line up with me, then there must be moderation. But this moderation must be learned from Nabi Sallam himself. Or those that had seen Nabi Sallam, the moderation must be learned from them. But if anybody and everybody gives his own two pence about moderation, obviously he's going to go off the mark. Now we look at the Sahaba Kiram and how did they moderate themselves. Abu Darda radiallahu anhu, he comes in as a guest, or Salman Farsi comes in as a guest at Abu Darda's residence. So he's there for a day or so. So he sees that these people are newly married. Abu Darda, wife is newly married, maybe a week or so. And when you are newly married, then there is a little bit of a different atmosphere in the house. And that atmosphere becomes visible. But now there is no such a thing like a difference, you know. Because Abu Darda, Salman Farsi is seeing him that he's performing tahajjud all the night. Perhaps the court is a little bit open, and he's visible, right? There is whole night he's just standing in tahajjud. And then meals time he's not taking meals. So that becomes even more visible. You get a guest in the house and he's not eating at the time of meals. So what is this going on? So Abu Darda, he wants to get up again for tahajjud. So Salman stops him, but not now. He wants to get up again for the second time, not now. In the last third portion of the night, now it's alright. You have to fast, but you're not going to fast. I'm not going to eat until you don't eat. Made him eat. We'll fast maybe once in a week or thrice in a month, whichever days, we'll fast. So this whole incident was reported to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Salman has done the right thing. So this moderation, what does this moderation mean? What we want today is, we want a concession to deen. We want the whole deen to become relaxed and full of concessions, and that concession we will call a moderation. Now concession is a different thing and a moderation is a different thing. And you make someone exempt to the law, he's an exception to the law, right? So an exception to a law is an exception. But that doesn't become the maximum, it doesn't become the rule. It's an exception to the rule. So when it's an exception to the rule, keep it as an exception. Man is starving, right? He's dying out of starvation. So we say, alright, he's dying out of starvation, for him to eat haram is permissible. So he saw the circumstance, he was dying out of starvation, there was only food available, so eat it, right? But if that exception was made the rule, like everybody can eat haram because that person was eating haram. Mullah was eating haram, so now all of us can eat haram. What will you say? You misunderstood the whole thing. Sometimes it's an exception of the rule, and sometimes it's not an exception, but it is like a loophole or a strategy made for a person. Normally you do this for a person that is new in Islam, right? He's new in Islam, he's still finding his feet, right? So you make a little bit of an allowance for him, you will give him a little bit of a strategy, or I do it like this and come through, right? For example, now he's not dressed up very well. He's not dressed up, he's coming to the masjid with a t-shirt and a jeans. So right, there's a concession, at least his satr is covered, his namaz is done, right? He wore a t-shirt and he wore a jean, or he wore a baggy, half the shin bone, and he came and performed his namaz. So you see, he's a new person, he doesn't know about Islam. So alright, never mind, you will overlook this. So it was a loophole that was made for this person in particular, looking at the background that he came. But now if someone makes that the maxim, that's the rule, the Imam Sahib began to perform namaz with a t-shirt. Comes to the Jummah, pre-Jummah talk, and is giving you a t-shirt. Or is delivering the khutbah on a Jummah with a big crowd here, with a t-shirt, or not even a t-shirt, just baggy pants, no t-shirt, the whole top is open, and just the baggy pants he's got. You will see that the namaz is valid because his sadr is covered, right? But will you look forward to performing namaz behind him? What will you say? That is defeating the whole spirit and the flavor of the Sharia is being destroyed. So you're not prepared to do that. So this is what happened now, is we moved away the spirit of the Sharia, we stripped the Sharia from the spirit and the flavor, and we just got the body and we're moving with it. Now, as though it's like a half-life body. Body got a little bit of life, but how long will it take for the body to die? Anytime you can just die. So the right thing is, now we come back and look at the Sahaba Kiram, alright, how did they go about this moderation plan? And we look into the Awliya Kiram, what did they do to moderate, to bring about a moderation? As Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullah Ali, we look at the moderation, right? So a cloth merchant comes around and he's offering the cloth to the royal class, monarchs, kings, etc., people that will pay the price. But the cloth is selling for such an exorbitant price that nobody wants to buy it. Nobody, the king, nobody can afford it. In the meanwhile, he comes and offers the same cloth to Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullahi. And from the looks of his face, he makes out that this merchant is really down. I came with such expectations that I'll make a big profit here, right? And nobody is buying this cloth. I have to move back 500 k's. That's zamana now. When you're traveling by camelback or horseback, I have to move back. I haven't sold my merchandise. I haven't sold anything. I have to move back. What a lousy feeling. What a disappointing feeling. So he made out that this person is disappointed. He's really down and out. And these awliya-i-kiram, they have got it in them that they don't like to disappoint anybody. Pick up the spirit, however, within the parameters of permissibility, they'll bring him up. They understand people, humanity, they understand, and they like to see happy faces. Or this person here, like he's disappointed. I came with that type of expectation, I'm going to make so much. And I came right to the monarchs here, and this is what they have done to me. Nobody is prepared to purchase my merchandise. See, in one zamana, it was like that. But whoever it was, all right, let's work out a plan for him, make him happy and let him go. Harun al-Rashid, I'll come to this story again. Harun al-Rashid, it's his zamana, Baghdad and Iraq and all these places here. So, up to now they call it Sawad. This land is very fertile. So fertile, so fertile. So the land was called a black land. Why black land? Because of the fertility of the land. So the crop was very rich. And the crop was very rich from the far, from the distance you look at it, was dark green, as though it was black. So they're calling it Sawad. The land was so good, right? So one person living far away from the Darul Khilafah, from the capital, far away, he's suffering this drought, and his wife is questioning him, you know what? Everybody goes to the Amir al-Mu'mineen and gets some type of assistance. Why don't you go see the constraints that we are in? Go there, maybe he'll help you out. So with the wife's continuous harassment, he gave in. Now, wife keeps telling you for the first time, second time, third time, then it's too much. You can't take it after that. So he says to the wife, all right, it is protocol that when you go to meet some great person, you must take a gift. You can't just go empty-handed. It's a great person, important person in our lives. So we take a gift and go. When ladies make kala, and they go and meet, right? So some relative, so they'll take some maska, something they'll take, biscuit or something they'll take, right? Don't we do that? And it's all good Islamic traits. Even though it may be a simple thing that you are taking, but you are extending some warmth, receiving some warmth and extending some warmth. You have to see now, make an expensive 10,000 rand cake and then they take it. No. Whatever was available, whatever was easy, manageable, there are some things, you took it across, right? You're receiving something and you're sending something. Now that was an Islamic flavor, Islamic culture, right? All these things here are moving out of the lives. We don't attach any importance to it. No. Whereas the hadith saying taharu, give gifts. Whatever is manageable, whatever. So Nabi Sallam wanted that there must be a promotion of love. Love must be promoted. Muhabbat must be extended, right? You can't be living cold lives. Not showing any love, not showing any respect, not showing any type of warmth. So that was not the style of Nabi Sallam. So you got something, mahaza, whatever, available. But you made it available. You presented it. Someone came to the house. Nabi Sallam. So, وَالْحَالُ فِي ذَلِكَ دُونٌ. Adi says, at that time, things were very tight. So, whatever was available, kajur was available, they presented that. Dates was available. Perhaps there was some type of a cereal. So that cereal was presented. Now someone may ask, only cereal, only kajur. the halat was such, when the circumstance was such, so what was manageable at that time, they offered that. And when they had no, then they even slaughtered an animal and presented that. We subdued that as well. So according to what was available, what was manageable at that time. So this extending of love, muhabbat, recognizing, showing warmth, really, it's an Islamic practice. I remember Al-Mu'ala Asad Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, Allah Ta'ala fill his grave with Noor. So around the late 60s, I think it was around the time that he started coming here, gracing our shores. So there was an invitation in Smyrna somewhere, and perhaps it was one of our families that was showing that hospitality and taking him as a guest. So just then the styles in the kitchen had just changed, you know, to chops and chips and steak and samosas and all that. One came down to that, onto the dasturkhan to have meals, and he says, "Ye khana tumhe bakhili sikhata hai. This type of food, you know, teach you to be miserly. I heard this when I was small, young, and I'm thinking, hey, what has this got to do with miserliness? They're feeding the mehman here, but I couldn't understand at that time that what has this got to do with being miserly. Then after some time, then I understood what he was saying. See, the old days, what it used to be, that a simple food, right, whatever was manageable, all right, for the mehman you did a little bit more better. But if it was this type of food, chops and chips and fries and all that, can you bring another three more mehman? So you saw someone and you want to bring him to the masjid, you want to bring him home, so I'll see you after Isha, don't worry. I'm just busy now. And you're ashamed to try and come home because, you know, you prepared just in limitation. Right. So the old style was you prepared some rice and some curry, ghost nitar curry, right? You prepared that. Now some additional mehman came, so the wife put one glass more water, two glasses of water, just put some kachumar or something, whatever, tomatoes or agar, and they made it comfortable for the two, three mehman. And you see that you could show the hospitality to so many more people. But now if you just eat chops, ice cream, dessert, this type of things, can you bring one additional mehman to the house? You can't do it. So now when this is going to become in vogue, it's going to become the common practice, then he will also think to himself that, well, that mehman comes to my house, I must have this, so much of chops, so much of samosa, so much of this, then only can I call a guest. So you will not be eager in calling a guest, you'll be reluctant. Right? You'll be reluctant. Now you know that when I have to call him, then I must have all these things, all these prepared. Otherwise, you just had dirty and you offered it to the person. So you may think to yourself, or he may think, well, you had only had dirty you had here. And what was the need for you to call me home? I could have something better at home. Why did you call me home? See, the whole taste and the flavor is gone. So that Islamic brotherhood, bonding, enhancing the spirit of muhabbat, that has left the lives. You don't want to call anybody. You don't want to practice the hadith, you know, enhance muhabbat. And muhabbat is an integral part of your iman. And your iman is incomplete until you don't show muhabbat. You don't want to practice it. Because your life has changed. Whole attitudes have changed. You know, I was explaining some days back. we forgot the flavor of Islam. The flavor and the spirit of Islam, we have let it out. We just got the body and we forgot the flavor. So now, this was a claim that I made, that you forgot the flavor of Islam and you got the bodywork. You got words, so many messages coming on your phone, this bayan coming in, and this talk is coming in, that istima is coming in, so many kitabs are coming, or you're coming across, right? But with all that, you forgot the flavor of Islam. You got so much, but the flavor of Islam has been lost, and definitely lost. So now, When I made this claim now, I have to support the claim. Now support the claim. How are you going to support it? I said, see, the Mises, at some time he mentioned this, right? Perhaps towards the end of his life, he mentioned this, that لَا الْفَقْرَ أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ. I'm not afraid of poverty overtaking you. That's not my fears. But what I'm really afraid about is أَنْ تَبْسُتَ لَكُمْ زَهْرَةُ الدُّنْيَا وَزِينَتُهَا. I'm afraid about this, that the dunya will open up to you. And when the dunya opens up to you, you will run after it. Try to compete. You know, when it opens out now, everybody will compete, right? I want it, you say you want it, he says he wants it, everybody wants it. We reading in every masjid got now du'as for the contentment of the heart. Right? So you read the du'a for the contentment of the heart, for contentment or discontentment, that you must get more. What do you read in the kitab for? That Allah Pak give you the contentment of what you got, Allah Pak must give you more. So the du'a is read for a wrong reason, not for contentment, but for Allah Ta'ala to make you discontent with what you've got, to be not pleased with what you got, make more and more and more. Is that the reason for reading this kitab? The reason for reading the kitab was that the wealth that Allah Pak has given you, you'll be happy with the lot of Allah Ta'ala, the decree of Allah Ta'ala. You're not looking for more shores and more opportunities. Allah Pak gave me, alhamdulillah, I'm very happy with the decree of Allah Ta'ala. Then you'll work, what was in your taqdeer, you will get. But if you're not happy with the decree of Allah Ta'ala, then you'll always be in a condition of worry, anxiety and fear. In the first case, when you're happy and enjoying the favors of Allah Ta'ala, you'll still get the same thing, but you will get it with happiness, you'll get it with satisfaction, without any fights, any disputes, any quarrels, any misunderstanding. You say, no, hey, Nabi Sam didn't like this for his ummah. So, what Nabi Sam didn't like, was not feared about, Nabi Sam wasn't afraid about, that became our fear. What he was not afraid about, that became the fear. Right? And what he was concerned about, that we are disconcerned. What he was concerned about, that we are disconcerned. But what he was not afraid about, that became the fear. Can you call yourself the right muqtadi, right follower? Imam is reading namaz in this direction, you're reading in the opposite direction. Nabi Sam saying, some do one thing and you're doing the second thing. Imam is reading 3 rakats and you're right, read 5 rakats. Can you call yourself the right follower? So with the same token, can you call yourself the right follower of Nabi Sam? So Nabi Sam's teaching was, be content, be happy with the decree of Allah Ta'ala. But he said, no, I need to have something more, and something more, and something more. So we're working directly opposite. So we got the information, so much of information, so much of bayan, so much of talks and lectures and everything going on. But yet, no, I must have it. I don't have this knowledge. How things are going to work out? If this is going to be a rainy day, what's going to happen? Who's going to bail me out? I got a problem. Who's going to take care of me? So what he was not concerned about, that became the concern. What he was disconcerned about, that became the concern. So we're talking of Harun al-Rashid, you know. And the wife is encouraging him, and you go. Right. But she understands that the protocol in a royal court is that you must take something. So she explains to him, you know, you're going to see Harun al-Rashid, so you must take something, you can't just go empty-handed. How can you go empty-handed? He says, well, what to take? So, right, you see that water there in that bag that we have got, that water container we've got, just take that water. See, that water is half decayed or rotten. They know, both of them know, but that is the most precious commodity they've got. That decayed water, that polluted water, is about the most precious commodity. There's nothing as precious as that. Or I take the most precious thing, most valuable thing, and offer that. But in the meanwhile, he comes to Harun Rashid, meets him, whatever protocol requires. Harun Rashid tells his treasury, all right, open the treasury and fill his leather bag with gold coins. Right. Right? Would that, he says to him, right? But you see, when you are taking, when you escort him out, then take him across the Euphrates, you know. Take him across the Euphrates. Now he's coming to the Euphrates and he sees the water crystal clear, bubbling and rushing there, you know. Say, what I gave and what he's got, no comparison. What I gave and what he's got, there's absolutely no comparison. So when you're doing for Allah Ta'ala, we don't think in our minds, I've done so much. We don't think at any moment that I've done so much. We consider ourselves like that peasant, that farmer, that villager in the drought, and he presented that rotten water, and in return what he got. So this is our sacrifice, our struggle, that is not worth anything. But it is the grace of Allah Ta'ala that he will crown our efforts with his grace. What we have done, and then how much Allah gives. You know, we look at our efforts, our struggle, absolutely nothing in it. We can't even say that we were 100% ikhlas. Can we say that? But with all that, all our discrepancies, all our weaknesses, Allah Ta'ala still accepts. Isn't that his grace, pure grace? So we are talking about striking a balance, right? Moderation. And this moderation thing, if we don't interpret it, then everybody will give his own explanation. But the explanation of moderation must come from the Hadith, must come from the Quran Sharif. And even a person that is more moderate than Nabi Sam himself, he knows what moderation is. He's given an explanation. Right. So he's asked Hazrat Fatima to be at home and Hazrat Ali radiallahu anhu to be outside. Everything that relates to the outside, you will do it. And Fatima, whatever relates to the house, you will do it. You in charge of the house and he's in charge of the outside. So there's a balance, there's moderation. Now everybody must go and earn. Will there be moderation? There's no moderation. But as I said, you know, you get an exception to the rule. But the exception cannot be made a maxim, can't be made a rule. Now you take all the women out of the house and say, no, this woman also, she worked, right? Number one, you need to understand that the Khadija didn't work. She had money and she invested it in a partnership or whatever it was, but she invested it. But can you show me that she went out to do business? She didn't come out to do business. Yes, she invested it. There's no problem, widow or whoever, but she wants to invest her wealth, she can invest it, no problem. But did she go out and practice business herself? She had other people doing her business. At times, maybe some did it, others did it, but she had some men to go and do out and run out her business. But herself, did she go and do out the business? She didn't practice the business. Now you say, no, Khadija had practiced business, then this is misleading. It's incorrect. It is deception. Giving an impression of Khadija would have been like, if she was alive today, na'uzubillah, one of these modern women driving around in a car, doing a business here, doing some business that side, teaching at an Islamic school. That's the impression that you are creating. But she had nothing to do with this. She's at home, and she's got this additional money, and she's investing it. So what's wrong in that? Now, unless and until we don't learn to look at the lives of Sahaba Kiram, then we'll make our own definitions. When we make our own definition, we'll distort Islam. The whole Islam will be distorted. And it's so important, especially in this day, to recapture the original shape of Islam, the figure of Islam, the design of Islam, with that flavor. Only the figure without the flavor, not going to work. Only the flavor, not the figure, not going to work. You have to get the figure, the shape of Islam, with the flavor, right? Now Islam brings about its full value. The flavor of Islam and the shape of Islam, get both in place, and when will you get Islam? There is namaz there. You've got all the postures, but there is no khushu in the namaz. Is the namaz worth anything? You want the khushu, very humble, very submissive, But you're not doing the namaz, you're not doing the postures. Would that namaz be right? So you need to have the postures of namaz, but with that humility, that submission, and with that level of focus, Allah Ta'ala. So now it's complete. But you just got one and you left out the other, is half a job. So we're talking of Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullahi, and this merchant has come in, right? This merchandise has come in, and he wants to sell the cloth. You know, he's gone to the monarchs, kings, nobody can pay the price. So eventually he comes here. And I explained that this awliya-i kiram, they don't hurt anybody. Shanidan ke mardane rahe khuda, nakardan dila dushmunatan. We hear that the friends of Allah Ta'ala, they don't even hurt the heart of an enemy. Junaid Baghdadi rahmatullah alayhi is engaged in his tahajjud namaz. In the meanwhile, some robber, he opens the door, forces open the door, right? What will be our response? What will be our response? Just for a moment, just think. So now, he's engaged in his namaz, and this person just pushes in. As he pushes in, so, he sees now that the robber doesn't find anything. He's looking around, and he can't find anything. So he found, Junaid had one shawl just near him. He took the shawl and gave it to him in his namaz. A small, amala kali doesn't break namaz. So he just took the shawl and gave it to him. One. Another occasion, someone comes to rob, and he's busy in zikr, this person came to rob. In the meanwhile, they told him, you know what, in a certain country, a certain abdal has died. They came and told him, in the meanwhile, a robber is there. Came to rob the house, came to loot the house, and someone just comes and delivers the message that a certain abdal, in a certain place, he's died. So he takes the hand of the robber by, iskule jao. Take him, make him the abdal of the place. What niyat he came, so inferior, but how the man blessed him. So without this tasawuf, that flavor of Islam goes away. The tasawuf, what he does, brings about the flavor. The taste of Islam, the enjoyment of Islam, that life in Islam comes with tasawuf. But that's the thing that we don't want to hear today. Just want to hear some, look at some storybook, or some kitab, or some masla, that's all. But we don't want to get this taste of Islam. And the continuity in your deed comes after you have tasted. Otherwise, that without the taste, there's no continuity. Without the taste, I ask you, you made samosas, right? But to the samosa, you didn't add any flavors. No spices, absolutely no spices. No onions, no spices, no dhania, nothing. You eat the second samosa. So the continuity in the samosa is subject to the flavor. You got the flavor, you'll enjoy. You buy one dozen today, tomorrow you buy 10 dozen, you continue, then you call a samosa apash to come and help you out. But you will do it when you got the flavor. But you didn't get the flavor, there's not going to be any continuity. Sometimes I have to speak to the madrasa boys, you know. One person has a chronic stomach problem. So think, you know, what is his problem? So I ask him, how much coke you drink? A thin, skinny boy like this. And I just asked him, oh yeah, how much of coke you drink? He felt embarrassed. I just took a chance randomly. More every day, about 3 liters. I'm thinking, he's such a thin, scrawny child. And 3 liters he's pushing. I said, well, leave this thing out. If you know what's good for you, please leave this thing out. Alhamdulillah, with the grace of Allah Ta'ala, in about 1 month, his stomach was sorted out, whereas he had a chronic pain. But that's not a thing to be living off. Now that's called extremism. You know, you talk about extremism, no moderation in your life. You find a taste in it, it's pushing that. One after the other, just pushing it. Is that moderation? So these Allah walas, they don't hurt anybody. They're gunegar, no gunegar, why that's between you and Allah Ta'ala. But why must I hurt you? You came in to me and I must make you feel happy somehow or the other. Whichever way is going to make you feel happy, let me do it. But within the parameters of permissibility, let me make you happy. Let me honor you. So what a beautiful society it will be, that each person is trying to please the other person, respecting him, showing muhabbat. You know, before you used to get old chachas coming to the masjid, and they'd have a whole load of sweets and trophies in their pockets. They see children out of the masjid, all the children come in line up. Chacha, what about mine? What about mine? But you see this muhabbat, there's different ways that you can extend that muhabbat. Sahaba Ikram themselves say, we should look forward toward a Jummah. Because on a Jummah, there was an old lady, she used to prepare some dish, very well she used to prepare it. Hardly any meat, you know, but she prepared it very well. And very lovingly, she would feed us. After Jummah, we were going to our straight, Meeta's house. Going straight, we have after Jummah meal. But we look forward, so much we look forward to that meal. But you see this extension of muhabbat, how can we do it? Someone got more, he's doing it more. Someone got less. But that extension, how to show that muhabbat, how to win the person out. So now it's reversed, we have to win the argument. Somehow, you know, I must have, my argument must be stronger than his argument. Somehow I must suppress the person. But Pari used to say it differently. Say it by, lose the argument, win the friend. Lose the argument, win the friend. You've got an argument now, going with your wife now. And you want to show you got upper hand, right? You'll get anything out of it. Now she'll feel depressed. Whenever I talk that I'm the loser, and he's always the winner, you know. I can never match him. Will she be happy in the house? But one day you say, you know, but you got a point, man. You know, you got a wonderful point. Whether you took a point or you didn't take a point, but you just made it know that, you know, you got a very valid point. How nice she feels. Then, you know, she wants to contribute. All right, man is taking my suggestions. Won't she feel nice about the whole thing? How to win people? Win people not so that you can become a big leader, but so that this muhabbat that is enhanced, you're extending muhabbat. There's a warmth, right? How to show that warmth, how to show that muhabbat. So meanwhile, the Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani rahmatullah, he says, alright, what's the price for this? Without batting an eye, he opens up his vault to take this. In the meanwhile, the king's man was around there, and he's relating the whole thing to the king. You know what? What you couldn't purchase, this man went and purchased it. See, in any community, you have this third group, you know, third force. And this third force also, and the third force work is to go and gossip, carry tales from one side to the other side. You see, everything is peaceful, it's too peaceful. So let's excite something, let's create some problem. It's too peaceful here. There's no fireworks. We need to have some fireworks here. So there is the third group always. Now this firework jamaat, you mustn't be part of it. Let the Diwali people do all the fireworks. You won't be part of the Diwali. The fireworks people, they will do about five things. One is, they will pass half the truth. And half a truth is worse than a lie. Half a truth is worse than a lie. Man comes and tell you, you know what? He bust my eye. So he got very irritated. My son, he went bust his eye. He banged him, smashed him down, right? Later on, you discovered that this person had killed his three children. In retaliation, he just gave one punch. What he said was right. Was it wrong or right? But did he give you the full truth or half the truth? He gave you half the truth. And you retaliated. But now his idea was what? His idea was to excite you. So he gave you what he wanted to give you. So you get this third group in every community, right, wants to excite trouble. But they know how to do it. They master it. They master at it. So they give you just one, what they want. Sometimes it's half the truth. Sometimes it is, the group is just there to excite, to incite. How to incite this problem? Yeah, you know, I was there, you know, and I heard, you know, your daughter, there was a proposal that came. Yeah, they were talking something there, you know. So you just incited now. See? Yeah, you see, wherever there's a proposal for my daughter, and this is what these people do. Yeah, these people are very dirty at heart. See, they're inciting problems. Yeah, he must be the one that's doing the jadu. That's why the proposal not coming through. Proposal are coming and this is getting rejected. Why? This person making jadu here. But you see, he's inciting. So there's one group that is made up its mind just to incite problems. One, just to carry half a truth. One is to incite problems, right? Right. One is to sow dissension, right? Somehow, between the ranks of the Muslims, just go and sow dissension. However you can do it, but just go and do it. So the right thing, under these type of circumstances, don't get involved. Just move away. You see anything that is not on the cause, right? Don't concern, it's not on cause, just move away. Aridan il jahi. How many times I have to repeat this nowadays? That you see that person, he is moving off the cause. He's saying something that, you know, that doesn't seem to be right. Just move away. Politely, respectfully, just move away. What will it cost you? If you move away respectfully, you stand to gain, not to lose. But now he incited you and you said something. Then it's a boom bang. And you punch and he punch. Now, it's who's going to throw the heavier punch? So, this is inciting problems. So this person goes and carries the message to the king. What you couldn't afford, he even bought the thing. Yeah, he's just biting you. He's just impressing upon you that you mustn't think too much of yourself. I will buy, I'll show you, I'll put you in your place. In the meanwhile, Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, we're talking of Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani, I'm thinking of Sayyid Fakhruddin Rahmatullah Ali, right? But look at how composed, how there's so much of moderation. He's somewhere in Hilal, you know, for some mashwara or something. And in the meanwhile, Hilal or whichever Markaz he must have been, in the meanwhile he heard that his wife had just passed away. So the message wasn't conveyed to him directly. No, they just called him to the hospital, let's come and see your wife and whatever. Under some pretexts they called him to the hospital. Now the doctor is relating the story. So the family was too afraid to disclose. So they told the doctor, you go and tell our father, that this is what happened. So the doctor mentioned it to Hazrat Sayyid Sahib. So look at his response. Immediately what he did is just found out the hospital, the direction of the Qibla, pulled out his turban, and read 2 rakat namaz, straight away. But you see the immediate response. Life partner, by the one that bore you all the children in your life. And now you hear that she's gone. So what's your immediate response? What's your immediate take? So this moderation, really, we have forgotten what's the meaning of moderation. So we have to look into their lives to understand what is moderation. So sometimes it's an exception to the rule, but that exception to the rule, we make it a rule. See, you got Hazrat Shuaib Alayhi Salaam, and Musa Alayhi Salaam has left Egypt for sanctuary, for reasons of sanctuary, he has left Egypt and he's taken some type of shelter in Madian, right? As he reaches Madian, so he sees a lake or a water place, whatever, and people are taking water, right? But in that whole crowd, he sees two young girls, and they are on one side. They've got sheep also, as the whole crowd has got sheep, they're taking the water for the animals. The animals are taking the water and they're moving. But these two girls, they are sitting on the one side, and they're quite calm, they're quite relaxed. And they're just keeping away their flocks. They're not allowing their flocks to mix up, and nor are they getting mixed up to the crowd. I mean, he saw this now, it seemed to be quite strange. Now, I must understand the psychology of a Nabi. A Nabi is always such that he wants to help. It's like natural. He can't resist. Anyone wants any help, he's there to offer it. Smallest help or big help. And more for the person that is a little bit weaker, and they will offer the help, no matter who it is. So the Shuaib Islam approaches them, but what's your problem? You came to fetch water, take the water and move. But why are you doing this? So they say, La nasqi hatta yusdira riya. We'll only provide water after the shepherds have watered the animals and left. Once they have watered the animals and left, then only we will take water. Alright, so the next question that can come up is that you're so parda conscious that you're not allowing yourself to mix up with the crowd, then why did you leave your home in the first place? If you are so parda conscious that you are not allowing yourself to be mixing up with the crowd, then why did you have to leave the house? So, they gave the answer, Abuna Shaykhun Kabir, our father is burning, right? Meanwhile, the house, the fires need to be kept burning, right? The house needs to be running, right? He's blind, and he's not old, he's advanced old. He's advanced old age. So one is he's in advanced old age and he's blind. So how are we going to run the house? We've got our mother here, young girls here, we've got him to run, to look after. And if we're not going to leave the house, how is it going to happen? Now you see the extreme situation that they had to leave the home. And when they had to leave the home, how they guarded themselves. The extreme circumstances which pushed them out of the home. But when they left the home, then how they guarded themselves? Did they go and mix up? Did they see to the animals with the rest of the crowd? Or they moved on one side complete, parda and everything on one side complete. When the rest of the crowd is gone, now whatever water that is left over, now they water the animals with that. But you see, when they have to leave, then they left for a valid reason. Right? And when they left for a valid reason, they didn't go and mix up with the crowd. Yusuf bhai, how are you? Alright. How are the tomatoes? Not that type of conversation. They kept completely aside. When the whole crowd is gone, now they go and do the business.